duties, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Happy days are here again, Higher Side Chatters, drinking a little drink, smoking a lot of smoke. I'm Greg Carlwood, and I'm honored to have John Rappaport on the show today, one of the best investigative journalists in the conspiracy space. He covers it all, the global elite and their multi-pronged attack to suppress the true potential of the individual, misinformation about health, and he's great at pointing out fake news stories and what effects they're meant to have on the masses. And we're going to cover as much of that ground as we can. But first, I got my good friend and occasional co-host Kyle Prineville here with me to lay the base. Kyle, my man, what's happening?
Oh, it's good to be on the show again, Greg.
Yeah, man, I love when you're able to do this. Otherwise, I'm just sitting here by myself, getting super high and popping bottles like I have any fucking reason in my life to celebrate. What can you do, you know? Little mimosa to get the show started. So what's new with you, man? What you been up to?
Well, I wanted to share a funny story because, you know, we have this conditioning. I write about this on my blog a lot. We have a kind of a perpetual conditioning since we're born, and it just keeps on churning out, and we just make sure we keep reevaluating our position within the group. And one crystal clear example happened to me. There's like a public theater, and they have some free seats way in the back in St. Louis called the Muni. And so we went to a show, and we were sitting in the free seats, and, you know, everybody's enjoying themselves and talking before the show starts. And then over the speaker system, you hear, "Now rise for the national anthem."
Of course.
You see literally everyone stand up. And to be honest, I feel this part of myself stand up, you know, and this feeling in my chest, the upper middle part of my chest, just is like, okay, well, it's time to stand up.
You're drawn in.
And I'm drawn in. Everybody's doing it. I start to do it. And then all of a sudden, my wife, Carrie, is like, "What are you doing? No, we're not doing this." And so I'm like, "Yeah, fuck the national anthem. Why am I standing for the national anthem? What is this?" And so we sat there, and you could just feel that the people around us were like, shocked, scared, startled, upset with us. Total strangers, you know. "You didn't stand?" You know, and if we were infirm, if we were like handicapped, we might have gotten an exception. But like the fact that we were able-bodied, it was like, why didn't you stand?
Right. Who decided that straightening your legs is necessary to show respect? It's an empty gesture.
Well, it's like praying before a meal. It's like this little ritual to make sure that we're all on the same team here. And, you know, it's kind of purposeless. We all agree. We know the words. We've done this a million times. But that ritual in the moment, we have to keep doing it in order to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah, it's funny because in high school there was a time where, and you remember how it was at St. Pius before they kicked me out. They were gunning for me for a long time. But one winter night at a football game, it was really fucking cold. I had this tiny blanket and a hot chocolate up in the bleachers. And I was all tucked in just right, and they did the national anthem, and I wasn't going to stand up. I didn't stand up, and sure as shit, Mr. Fuckhead Zelenko was standing behind the bleachers and saw me calmly sitting there, not making a scene at all, and as soon as it ends, he yells up to me that I just earned myself a detention. So while school was not in progress, I did something that got me punished at school, which, you know, is a common thing back then. You know, that happened to me a lot, so, you know, fuck that place. St. Pius High School in Festus, Missouri. If you're sending your kids there, you should be on trial for fucking child abuse. They kicked me out for really just resisting to comply with the rules. And meanwhile, they have several teachers that are allegedly fucking students.
Allegedly.
I think we could both name at least two cases of male teachers slithering into the pants of young impressionable girls who look at these people for guidance, and all they have in mind is dipping their demon cock into the sweet nectar of an innocent. You know, that's school. So we have parents paying $1,000 a year, thousands of dollars a year, really. I don't even know how much money that should be going to pay for all the tools needed to help their kid kickstart their passion in life.
Proper nutrition.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that too. Oh. But, you know, if you're looking to the point of this is to better your kids' chances at success. You know, take that couple thousand and buy them a real quality movie camera if they want to be a director. You know, like, do something for them besides indoctrination.
Yeah, there's this kind of, the indoctrination drops off after a certain point. You know, you become so conditioned, you're saying, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, okay, I'm going along with the show, going along with the program, I followed all the rules. But then when it gets to, what am I supposed to do with my life? That's where the programming ends. They're like, oh, why are you asking me? I don't give a damn. Why are you talking to me about what you should be doing? You need to go get a job. You need to go figure it out for yourself. It's like, whoa, I've been following the rules just on autopilot this whole fucking time, and all of a sudden now it's like, oh, it's on me. Now it's on me to figure out what I'm going to do to grind away to make a living in this world. It's not that great. You know, where's the guidance now? Now I need somebody to say, you know what, you'd be a great painter.
Yeah.
That's what you need
all
to
that
do.
Effort and energy and money goes to an education filled with false information and the destruction of creativity and uniqueness. Yet I was the bad guy because I fucked with the national anthem. Didn't stand up.
Yeah, well, did you tell him that you had a hot beverage?
There's a beverage here, man.
These people have no respect for a hot chocolate and a blanket. They just think the national anthem supersedes
it's
all.
Disgusting. And, you know, that's kind of like we were talking about yesterday, and you mentioned that everybody wants us to be on the same team. You know, people say our government, our military, but it's not ours. It has nothing to do with us. It's their army, they being the highest elite, and they have us use the term our because if we don't look at it from, you know, we won't look at it from an opposing viewpoint if we say our.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, people travel across the world and they think that because they're an American, that has some context, like, it's so wrapped up in their identity that they just think these terrible things are going to happen to them if they travel. But it's like, people talk about our reputation across the world, the U.S., oh, we have a bad reputation. Like, who is we? If I personally, as the individual, go to Chile, do you think these people are mad at me because of the United States? What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
We're talking about totally separate things.
But yeah, there was an Egyptian protest sign that kind of went viral, a picture of it that I saw many places, but it said, you know, to the American government, basically, fuck you, get the hell out of here, we're sick of your shit. And then underneath that, it said, to the American people, we got nothing but love for you. And I thought that was pretty powerful, but at the same time, you have to accept some responsibility for your government. You know, people aren't worried about the reputation in Turkey because Turkey doesn't have a goddamn base in every country on the planet and isn't bombing the shit out of the Middle East. You know, you gotta, like, people aren't mad at Canada or Australia because they don't let their governments completely run amok. So I do think we do have some sense of responsibility, at least that we should be resisting this. We should be protesting. I would be mad at us.
Yeah, I think most civilians in other countries would be mad at us. It's just, I don't know. It's like there's a really aggressive, mean jock, physically violent, drunken jock who's in charge of our team. And like everywhere our team goes, he just is totally violent, goes way overboard, is totally racist and culturally insensitive, and he's just getting in fights with people all the time. And like, this guy's on our team and he represents us everywhere we go, and everybody else on the team is kind of sitting there like, geez, yeah, this guy's kind of an asshole, he's on the loose again, you know, who's gonna stop him? None
That's
of us
true.
Can stop
I mean,
him
we just seem like we should have some responsibility because we're nearest to him, you know, but we're just as big of victims as anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, he's our teammate. But it's like we really don't have a coach, you know? In that analogy, who's the guy from the outside perspective who knows what's right and is like, okay, well, you're being really violent and aggressive. It's out of line, you know? We need to re-strategize what our team is doing. Because this guy, the military-industrial complex, he's an uncaged beast.
And you know, people, I hope you really enjoy your Support the Troops bumper sticker, because it's those very same troops that are going to be dragging your ass through the streets like the scum you are, because they've been brainwashed to believe, for whatever reason it will be at the time, that we're the bad guy, because we're not on that team. So we can be shot and beaten and put into a camp. The tide will turn. And I feel like we're in the midst of that with all the spying and the drones, the needing for justification of a domestic drone strike, needing of justification to kill a person because the government has determined that they committed whatever crime they're supposed to have committed. I mean, when the person's dead, going back and going over the evidence and putting them on trial really doesn't do a whole lot of good.
Yeah. Murder, I mean, like with drone strikes or indefinite detention, like at Guantanamo Bay, yeah, they can just seize people, no charges, no trial. Not that I think courts are just, but there's just no way to undo the them putting you in a cage. Once they've put you in a cage, you're there. I don't know how you can Houdini your way out of that.
Right. Did you see that video that was going around of Mos Def going through the forced feeding procedures that they go through at Guantanamo Bay?
It was terrifying, and yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, I had a few people comment on that saying, like, this is not that unusual. This is what they do in the medical profession. You know, he's being pretty dramatic. And I'm just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, hold the fuck up. I mean, shouldn't a person have the right to die? Like, I mean, Jesus Christ, I guess that's a big issue. It is illegal. It is definitely against the law. But someone should have the right, the right to their own life to die. You are force feeding people that are protesting the conditions in which they're being held under, which is no trial. We don't even know their names. They're locked away in a dungeon for their entirety of their life. I mean, Jesus Christ, I'm upset because 40 hours a week I have to go to work. These people, 24/7 locked in a cage away from everyone they know. Their only escape is to die. Their only means of that is to not eat. You know how fucking hard that must be to just fucking die of not eating? And yet they get a tube shoved up their nose and they get fucking pate, cat food, fucking nasty ass blended meat put up their nose. Like, that is got to be hell, and they're only living because of that, and they can't die. Like, Jesus Christ, what kind of fail? I mean, that's ridiculous. And then to have that be defended,
it's impossible to defend. It's insane. But the only possible rationale is that the person who's force feeding the person who wants to voluntarily die, the force feeder is actually the one who has their best interest in mind. You know, they really know what's best for you, and it's kind of silly to commit suicide, don't you think? So I'm just going to give you a little bit of food up through the nose, and we're just going to keep this show going. But it's done, you know, and this is an analogy for religions too. It's like, I'm helping you. Accept my help, because I know what's best for you, and you don't even know what's good for yourself.
Right. You know, something else I wanted to address before we bring the guest in is, like, you know, I guess a lot of people look at the Venus Project or the Zeitgeist Movement, and they say that is a shell for the New World Order, because they want one world governance also. But one world governance isn't the bad guy. It's you know, the authoritarian state, you know, the surveillance state, the countless things they do to people, obviously, that are bad. There's no way you could look at the world operating as one and think that that's a bad thing. It's all just about corrupt leadership. And, you know, our guest today, John Rappaport, he talks a lot about collectivism. And we're kind of hinting on those topics, on those themes, because being on the same team creates a situation where that's how the Nazis rose to power. They created a space where everybody was like, oh, I want to be on that team. And then you kind of put up with the bad things that the leadership of that team does. You know, that's exactly what it is to be an American. You want to be on the American team. You don't necessarily like the military or the drones or the surveillance, but, you know, it's all part of being on the team. And that groupthink is definitely detrimental. And it's definitely a control mechanism, but at the same time, I really do think that creating a world that is unified would make it very hard for war to break out again. You know, you got to have people thinking of themselves as humanity rather than as white people, black people, Americans, Middle Easterns. And that's pretty important. But I guess John's bigger point is the suppression of the individual's power. And yes, obviously, I think everyone should be able to do what they want to do. I don't want any restrictions on the way a person lives their life, but I think we should be working as a global unit. And I don't care if that's something the New World Order also wants, because it's completely different in my mind.
I mean, these guys want to control the banks and the money, but they do so by divide and conquer. They make little factions fight between each other, and slowly they control everybody. But I think that's quite a different thing from a one-world kind of like perspective, where we looked at all life and all people's lives as valuable, and if anybody is locked in a cage or getting force-fed tubes up their nose, then none of us are really doing that great, and we got some serious shit we need to resolve still.
Yeah, I feel like the path of the individual, though, sometimes takes a right-wing libertarian kind of perspective and saying that, you know, everybody should have the right to live their life without any regulations and not all this red tape in the way of their dreams. And that's something I agree with. But at the same time, you know, if there's people in your community suffering, do you really have security? Now, and it's not even just about that, but that's the way I try to reach them, is saying, you know, you may not give a shit about Dave down the street who's taking cans out of your garbage to eat, but the day there's no cans there, he might just come in your house with a knife and say, give me what's in your fucking wallet because I got to eat. And you don't want that. That's a regulation type. That's some red tape to go through. But I just hate when I hate the cold-heartedness of the libertarian perspective.
Yeah, there's a cold-heartedness in almost every, even the so-called bleeding heart liberals. Like, everybody essentially has a cold heart in the regard that because the pace of our lives is so busy in order to just get by, like, we don't notice the well-being of the community around us. And if we were just living with, like, no work schedule and no real, like, timelines, the first thing that would kick back in is empathy, and we'd look around and go, shit, like, these guys aren't doing so good. And we would go towards those problems. But, you know, in our day-to-day lives, you kind of feel like, well, maybe there's some health agency that's helping them, or some government group can help them, or some church or something, but I can't take time out of my day. I can't dedicate my resources to helping other people.
True. Amen, man.
The individual is forced to, like, like you're a rugged, out there, wild animal on your own, just trying to fend for only yourself. And yet the community around you falls apart, tears down the property value around you. It endangers everybody when people are poor and looking for food or drug crazy because they can't function in this world, which is, in my opinion, totally legit. It's a hard world to function in.
Agreed, man. What can you do?
I mean, we can unleash the power of the individual, and that's what I want to hear about.
And it looks like it's about that time. I'm two bowls and three mimosas deep, and we got to get the bills paid, get John on the horn. So let me tell you, if you haven't checked them out yet, Mind Comics is a company that puts on some great, great little comics, all in a PDF format for like a couple dollars a piece. They have Off Grid, which we've talked about before. It's a tale of in the not too distant future where a small pocket of freedom fighters are resisting and trying to keep it together against the enslaving, drone-happy government. They also have Psychonauts, which I haven't read, but it involves weed, aliens, and video games based on the cover picture. So that's a serious triple threat if you ask me. So go explore the outer reaches of your mind at mindcomics.com, mindcomics.com, and use the coupon code THC to get 20% off and to let them know I sent you. I also wanted to mention that if you're in Missouri, there's an event in Lee's Summit, which is way the fuck out there, but it's this weekend. It's the second annual Mid-Continent Paranormal Conference. It's cheap, and it's going on this weekend, August 2nd, 3rd. They wanted THC to have a presence there, but it was just too hard to get that going. We're going to send Kyle out there to represent, but even for a guy who lives in Missouri, Lee Summit, it ain't close.
Well, I apologize. I mean, it just happened to be in a situation where my car needed to be fixed, my tooth, et cetera, et cetera. I would love to be at this con. This is a wonderful con. I support this con. And perhaps, you know, by some stroke of fate, they will see me there.
Yeah. That'd be nice. But either way, it's this weekend if you care. I told them I would mention it, you know, because they wanted us to be involved. I said I can't be involved, but I can at least tell people about it. But I can't make a habit of doing this for every fucking thing. I know I've been plugging a shitload of events lately, and it's because I want the alternative movement to gain some real-world steam. But, I mean, I'm going to have to stop because the excitement and enjoyment I get out of these events is always trumped by my disappointment at how small and old the crowd is. I can't find 20 people under the age of 30 at the one ParanoiaCon event ever, yet the shitty baseball team can fill the stands 3 times a week. It kind of pisses me off. I want more out of all this, you know? But I think I'm just going to have to be happy with the show and move out of the country where I can still broadcast and just hope for the best, man.
Amen.
Anyway, finally, Conspiracies, my conspiracy-themed high-quality clothing brand, is the best way to help THC and look good doing it. I have a lot of different designs with a ton more on the way once I get good at the hand printing. And unlike so many other things in the world of conspiracy, I try to make these shirts stylish and high quality, but I'll let the ad do what it does, and we'll be getting deeper than a St. Pius school teacher on the other side of the John Rappaport. Boom.
Oh my God, St. Pius.
We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the brave roof tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dress or frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
All right, people, let's get this party started. Welcome back to THC. Today is going to be another journey deep into the rabbit hole. We all know that the mainstream news is as staged as an episode of Storage Wars, but by studying these stories and the narrative put out by the corporate media, we can get a little insight into how they're trying to influence the people and which cliff they're trying to march you off of this week. So we're going to look at a few of these recent news stories, these small branches of the conspiracy tree, and then hopefully we can broaden things out a bit and try to look at the tree as a whole, the roots that help it grow, and the people who water it. And today's guest is just the man to take us on that trip. John Rappaport has been writing about the real news they don't want you to know about for many years on his website, nomorefakenews.com. And in his two massively large collections, The Matrix Revealed and Exit from the Matrix, he also does that as well. John was a candidate for the U.S. congressional seat in the 29th District of California and has also been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize from right here in sunny San Diego. John, welcome to THC.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you. I'm really excited for this show. Some of the topics you talk about, like the true creative power of the individual and the false reality we've bought into, are really interesting, and they're conspiracy at its core, really. And I definitely want to build to that. But let me kick this off by asking you about the Edward Snowden situation. I've come to learn that if the mainstream media is covering any story at length across all networks, then it's probably not a true story or the narrative has been altered. And so as more and more of the Snowden story was being reported, I started to wonder what's really going on here. And it seems like we're getting real information, but the media are the gatekeepers and they don't tell us what we're not supposed to know. So something's not right. You have a pretty interesting analysis of the situation yourself. Would you mind walking us down that path a little bit?
Sure. Well, I've written a number of articles on this, and basically I took my cue from the breaking story in The Guardian about Snowden and his own statements about his background, because many things seemed strange to me, starting with the fact that as a high school dropout, he suddenly assumed a position with the CIA, was sent to Geneva under diplomatic cover, which is serious stuff, and became kind of a supervisor there on systems security. Then he claims that one of the key events that soured him on the CIA was when, in Switzerland, a few CIA guys did something to a banker. They encouraged him to get drunk and to drive, and he got busted, and then they bailed him out, and they formed a bond, and then eventually the banker started feeding the CIA guys, you know, privileged information. And I thought to myself, wow, that doesn't ring true. You're telling me a guy's working for the CIA and an incident like that, which is sort of, you know, just the very mildest of the kind of things that the CIA does, turned this kid against the CIA. And then he also claimed that even at that early date, 2008, while he was in Geneva, he had enough information to take down the entire U.S. intelligence network, which to me seemed very dubious. And then, of course, we have the whole episode. I'm sort of shortcutting this. There are other anomalies in his backstory. Sure. But then he goes to work as a contractor for Booz Allen, and he's assigned to the NSA. And we're supposed to believe that the NSA, which is the most brilliant and comprehensive and meticulous spy agency in the world, just happened to forget to put security measures in place within their own shop to prevent a lone systems analyst like Snowden from stealing the farm with a thumb drive and walking out. I highly doubt that that story is correct, and I think that we have to keep in mind that the whole spying network are trained liars, and they lie all the time, so why should we believe such an improbable tale? I don't think that's the way it happened at all. I think that whatever Snowden took, he didn't have access to himself, that the NSA really does compartmentalize its data stashes, and that it's very difficult for any one person to take down the whole system and to walk off with it, thereby being able to expose everything that NSA does and how they do it, the blueprint, the whole shoot and match, that in fact these documents were given to Snowden as part of some kind of an operation. And my hypothesis is that this could very well be the result of an internal turf war that's been going on for a very long time between the CIA and the NSA, because the NSA has proved to be the boss when it comes now to intelligence gathering, because everything has gone electronic. And the CIA, which formerly relied on human-gathered intelligence, was like the dinosaur in the club. And they have resented that for a long time, and this has to do with government budget money. I quoted an incident up on the Hill where we see that several billion dollars was taken away from the CIA and at the same time added on to NSA. These people in that community are extremely provincial in many respects. That is, internal warfare among agencies is the order of the day. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if Snowden's former employees or somebody there in the CIA approached Snowden and said, look, we know you're patriotic. We know you have good intentions. We think the NSA is getting out of hand here. They're spying on everybody. And we need a guy. We need a guy who is willing to go to work for the NSA, to pretend that he no longer has any CIA connections. And we will provide that guy with documents that are going to hopefully punch a hole in the NSA's reputation, and maybe we can take them down a notch. Are you that guy? And these would have been a number of conversations to vet Snowden and to decide that, yeah, he's willing to go along with this. There are a number of other potential explanations, but the one that Snowden himself gives, to me, is just simply too far out. For example, here's another one.
Mm-hmm.
He enlists in the military service when he is, 18, 19, still doesn't have a high school diploma, and all of a sudden he's in special forces training. I don't know how that happened, but let's assume that it did. And he then has a training accident, he says, where he broke both legs, and therefore he was, dismissed from the service. Well, hold on a minute. The only reason that he could have gotten into the Special Forces program in the first place, as far as I can see, is that he's a computer whiz. And they certainly do need people like that, but why would breaking two legs suddenly, they call him into the office and they say, gee, Ed, you broke both legs, so now we know you can't help us with computers anymore. Therefore, when you heal up, we're going to discharge you from the service. Doesn't add up, doesn't make any sense. So, I just put all of this together and said, yes, it's a good thing anytime we can take down the surveillance state a notch, although I don't really see that happening. It's a good thing to expose the NSA because there are a lot of Americans who didn't know what was going on, although a lot of us already knew all of this stuff. Okay, fine, great. But let's not, pin all of our hopes on one guy or think that we understand the real motivation behind this.
Yeah, the idea of interagency war kind of makes sense, because didn't the CIA also expose the affair that General Petraeus was having, which made him resign from the FBI? That's kind of a shot at the FBI right there.
Well, he actually resigned from the CIA.
Oh,
so it could have been the other way around.
Reverse.
Yeah, so sure, the FBI exposes this because they want to take the CIA down a notch. There's this behind-the-scenes interagency warfare is going on all the time because they're all battling over the same basic money pie that Congress allots in the budget. That's just one of the reasons that they battle with each other. And the public isn't exposed to that, but it's always going on.
Yeah. The idea of these interagency power struggles, it's an example that I hear skeptical people use to say that there is no conspiracy. There is no capstone to the pyramid, if you will. It's all just various groups fighting for power and money, which does definitely seem true on one level, but our society
seems only one level.
Right. Things seem to be set up so carefully and with every detail considered, I have a hard time believing that that's not the product of decades or even centuries of careful planning by powerful people, no?
I agree. Absolutely. It's all about levels. It depends on where you plug in. You see different events happening at different levels. It's like being in an elevator in a big building. You go up to floor number 3 and you get out. Okay, this is what you see. But if you get back in and you go up to 7, you're going to see other players doing other things for other reasons, even though the events are the same.
Yeah.
They take on different coloration and different hue and different meaning. And if you go up high enough, now you're really looking at some serious planning, long-range planning. And you can also see the objectives. So you can learn a lot more the higher you go.
Absolutely. That's a great analogy for it. That's what I want to get to. I want to get to the highest level of understanding, And it seems to be the deeper I'm digging into some of the other things that have happened lately. Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing. There's a lot of people out there that are saying these weren't even real events, that they were completely fabricated for the cameras with crisis actors. That's some pretty deep level stuff. If that were to be true, that's pretty bold. Have you looked into that aspect of it at all, or seen any evidence of that to be true?
I've looked into it. I've got to say that at this point, I'm always willing to change my mind, but at this point, from everything I see, I look at these events as having significant staged elements for particular purposes, but I don't see them as things that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see them as completely false, although, yes, You know, we've got this strange mixture of we're doing drills while the real thing is happening, you know, all of that. And in the drills, crisis actors are used and so forth. And there are even anomalies like that in the real scenes to make them seem worse than they were or to focus the public's attention. But at this point, I would have to say that I think that these events actually happened. In other words, people died, people were wounded, and so forth. And one of the reasons I would say that is because the people that stage these kinds of things have no compunctions about doing it.
Right,
I mean, they don't care whether people die. They don't have to go to just such elaborate lengths, which would expose them to the possibility of being discovered, you know, in some ultimate simulation fabrication where they're quite willing to kill real people with real bullets. But the staging of the events, and even more how they're being used after the fact, then we get into some real stuff about social and political engineering of the population. For example, you know, the whole Second Amendment gun issue.
Mm-hmm.
We now have to take the right of self-defense of everybody away from everybody because we've had these three incidents, you know, at Aurora, Sandy Hook, and Boston, is completely absurd. And there are other agendas that are being promoted at the same time, which, you know, there's always the agenda of trying to make people fearful,
right,
and to pull in their energies and to say, we have to cede authority to the leaders and the police and the army and, you know, law enforcement and everybody just so we can stay safe. So keep us safe, wake us up when it's over, and we won't cause any waves. Well, now that you're talking now about a huge, multi-pronged campaign that's been going on for a very long time, which is to pacify populations, to put mm-hmm. them in a state of trance, basically.
Yeah, I mean, another big level to these recent events. I mean, yes, gun control seems to be one of them. Another one seems to be mental health, you know, by saying that some of these shooters are on antidepressant medication and stuff like that. You can then take mental health, which is kind of subjective. You know, you can, there's a lot of gray area there to say someone isn't mentally healthy and you can lock them up and do whatever you want with them. You know, they're now a threat.
You bet. I've written a lot about this. I mean, as much as I've written about any other journalistic subject over the years, I guess you could say I've written as much about psychiatry and the hoax factor at so many different levels within psychiatry. Yes, in the wake particularly of Sandy Hook, we saw mm-hmm. Obama say, okay, we're going to build new community mental health centers across America. We're going to have much more careful surveillance, which plugs the surveillance state into all of this, so that we can identify these people as being mentally ill before they do these things, and we can put them away, we can get them into treatment. And all of this is code. It's code for making fake psychiatric diagnoses of huge numbers of people in the population, calling them dangerous and mentally ill, putting them in psych wards, or, which amounts to something quite similar, putting them under the influence of psychiatric drugs, which also is like a chemical straitjacket. And so now that agenda has upped the ante tremendously in America as a result, particularly of Sandy Hook, where the population, for example, we have a state law that was passed immediately in New York saying that a psychiatrist, any psychiatrist, had to report any patient that he thought might be a danger to himself or others to the authorities. And then if that person owned a weapon, that weapon would be confiscated, taken away, and he would be refused any weapon in the future. Wow. All of a sudden now you've got the surveillance state aligned with psychiatrists so that if a patient goes into a shrink in New York State and says off the top of his head, you know, I've had thoughts of killing my mother. Oh, now that psychiatrist is sitting there thinking, oh, man, if I don't report this dude, and then he actually does something, now it's all on me with the new law. So I must err on the side of caution for my own survival and start reporting anybody who has any thoughts of violence that he expresses to me. And now what we've got is, forget doctor-patient confidentiality, that goes out the window, and now we've got really a psychiatric state, martial law state, and a fantastic amount of control that's being exercised over people through doctors, through the police, working in conjunction with each other. So you bet. I mean, I could go off on this for a long time, but one thing I would say, and I've proved this over and over again at No More Fake News with my articles, is there is no mental disorder in the books, of which there are about 300 official separate labels of mental disorders. There is no mental disorder that has any confirming diagnostic test whatsoever. No blood test, no urine test, no saliva test, no brain scan, no genetic test, nothing, zilch, zero. They're all fabrications and fictions. Which is not to say that there aren't people running around who have serious problems or are acting in bizarre fashion or who are suffering, for example, from severe allergies or nutritional deficiencies or chemical poisoning, etc., or who are not suffering and in pain, emotional pain, or don't have problems. You bet, there are. But to chop all of that up now into these distinct disorder labels that require the patient to receive toxic drugs, and they're all toxic, the whole panoply of psychiatric drugs, and to saddle them with false diagnoses, you are now talking about a PSYOP, a psychological operation aimed at the population through this pseudoscience called psychiatry, which is enormous and growing all the time.
Oh, man. That's sad stuff. But, you know, to get a little bit deeper into this, you know, media manipulation and government oppression is pretty easy to grasp. But let's talk about why these things are going on. Why is this false reality being presented? I mean, you talk about the real goal being suppression of human potential, throwing our energy out of whack, destruction of the imagination, things like that. And I see how it's possible, but I struggle with it because you have books out there like The Secret and New Agers who talk about manifesting your reality. And of course, it sounds good, but I just haven't seen enough evidence of it to believe that that's possible. I mean, how did you come to these conclusions about what's going on at the core?
Okay, well, let me take up that last statement that you made, because I agree with you completely when it comes to New Age philosophy and The Secret and all that balderdash. Because what those people are basically saying is there's a trick. And if you learn the trick, then you can do the trick, such as, you know, I think this and then I manifest what I want. That's absurd. What I'm talking, when I talk about creative potentials, I'm talking about a creative life, you know, a commitment to a creative life, which is a completely other thing. It has nothing to do with the you know, short attention span version, which is just a kind of a sales gimmick that is promoted by people who are, you know, have their own motives for doing it. No, what I'm talking about is the repression of the basic core of what a person is, which is individual power, energy, freedom, creative potential, imagination, the ability to create new realities, and not just with a flick of the finger, but, you know, through work, through a life lived through and by the imagination to create what a person most profoundly wants to create in life. And most people don't even have a clue about what that would be. So you're really starting from kindergarten with most people when you even bring up this subject, because most people believe that imagination is just a toy for children, and when they get to be a certain age, then they're taught, okay, that's the end of that, and now you have to fit in to society and find a niche for yourself and become an android, basically, and live that life. Well, creating androids is, you might say, the ultimate goal of globalism, which now we're getting into the upper floors of the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
The elites on this planet want to put the entire planet under one management system, one political and economic management system, one military management system, one legal management system, one medical management system, and so forth. And this involves mega corporations and governments acting in concert. And the reason that these elites want to do it is, first of all, they want that power. They want to be at the top of what people call the New World Order or whatever they want to call it. But it's basically a management system. We own the power, and we will give you what we want to give you, and we will take from you what we want to take from you. All goods and services distributed from a central point through algorithms that are developed. We decide who eats, who doesn't eat, who has fresh water, who doesn't, when and where certain goods are going to be produced and where they won't be produced. It's a planetary chessboard, and the elites run it, and they want to run it more comprehensively. And in order to be able to do that, they have to subdue and pacify the population. Mm-hmm. They have to distract the population. They have to promote certain high-sounding ideals that mask their true intentions and talk about we're all in this together and humanity is one and it's all unified and we have to raise ourselves to that consciousness to see that the individual is a myth that is no longer necessary in our evolution and we can discard it. Everything is the collective and the group, etc., etc., etc. Now we're getting into the more upper reaches of what the real agenda is.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Kyle.
I just wanted to say that from the outlook of the, you know, state apparatus and these corporate model and how the psychologists view us, it would seem like the creative personality is itself kind of a disorder. And that from their point of view, the very robotic kind of like going to and from work, driving in your car, that's considered completely normal. But the person who might experience pain and emotion and have a long process before they can finish a piece of work, that is definitely viewed as something quite strange and possibly in need of medication.
Yeah, they're unstable.
You bet. You've nailed it. I mean, that is a major facet of elite philosophy. And just to kind of flesh that out a little bit more, the elites look at humanity at large and the population as dangerous, potentially dangerous, out of control biological machines who are unpredictable unless reined in, who have no impulse control, who could go off at any time in some mass revolts for no apparent reason, as if triggered by something. And so therefore, according to their view, all this has to be brought under control and order must prevail. And since they view us as having absolutely no spiritual or creative component that is intrinsic to who we really are, then in their thinking, it's simply substituting one mind control program for another. In other words, they already look at humanity as being under a misplaced and not very good mind control program that needs to be changed. It needs to be changed to a far more orderly and dominant paradigm of mind control. And then everything will be okay once that's enacted fully. That's how they look at us. So for the kind of person that you're talking about, say, who is an artist and who is, you know, embarked on a major enterprise of creativity, that's a disease of some kind. That's an aberration in the program. That needs to be treated. That needs to be tranquilized and sedated and put on the shelf because that's unpredictable.
Yeah.
So you bet. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a topic that really hits home to me because as Kyle and I were just talking in the pre-show, we went to school together in a private school, and there's tons of examples of little times where I felt like I was doing something creative that I was really into that kind of got stripped away from me, and I was told to pay attention. Like, we were, I think, like four or five guys in our class in the fifth grade were writing novels. We were all writing these sci-fi novels, and we didn't give a shit what was going on in class. We just wrote, and then we showed each other after school, like, what we were writing. And we all got called in to the office, like, hey, these kids aren't paying attention in religion class because it's a Catholic school. And, you know, this really needs to be addressed. And it's like, well, what are they doing? Well, they're writing these novels. And my dad is like, whoa, my fifth grader's trying to write a book? You better let that be, you know? And it's like, you're paying thousands of dollars for this so-called education to find some type of inspiration for your life. And really, what you're getting for your money is the exact opposite.
You bet. Perfect example. So, you know, there was every chance, just making a few small adjustments, that you guys would have all been diagnosed with ADHD and dosed with Ritalin,
right,
or Adderall,
yeah,
because that's exactly the kind of thing where a doctor, forget a doctor, first a teacher, then a school counselor, then a principal, then a shrink, because all these are referrals up the line, would say, oh, really, distracted, bored, fidgety, writing a novel, yeah, okay, well, all right, so you've got, in my menu here, you see, there's no test for this. In my menu of behaviors, you've got ADHD. You're hyperactive. So you need the following drug, Ritalin or Adderall. So what are these drugs? They are amphetamine-like drugs. They're speed, cheap speed. So you give a kid this, and what happens? Most of the time, or at least some of the time, the immediate response is, wow, clarity. Wow, that's just pretty good. I like this stuff, see. And so the kid goes along with it. And then after a certain amount of time, which could be almost immediate or it could take longer, you get a speed crash. What does that mean? Irritability, aggressiveness that is way out of line, sort of in a totally antagonistic attitude about everything, jittery, nervous, all the symptoms of a speed crash. And then, quite often, you get a state of sadness. Kid withdraws, withdrawal. Okay, mommy takes the kid back to the shrink. He looks at the kid and says, okay. So what we have here is a completely new disorder called clinical depression. Well, doctor, could this have anything to do with the Ritalin and Xanax? Absolutely nothing, not connected whatsoever. This is the emergence, which we see quite often, of a new condition, clinical depression. So now what I have to do is prescribe Zoloft. Okay, so now one of the effects of Zoloft is a manic condition. And so now the kid begins to do the up and the down and the up and the down, the up and the down, back to the shrink, and he says, well, the clinical depression diagnosis was only partially correct because now what I see is this is really bipolar. So now what we have to do, manic depression, I have to give the kid valproate, lithium. Now we're talking about the possibility of, stroke, death from these drugs,
God,
among other effects. So this is the ladder that they put you on. And it's all part of this. You know, that's on, we get off the elevator on 4-3 for that. But if we go up to 7 and look at the bigger picture, now what we're looking at is the creation of the global state wherein the entire population is put under this kind of control, one way or another, so that eventually the end desired result is passivity, complete passivity.
Yeah,
that's,
man,
where they're going.
It's super sad. You know, it's kind of funny because it's like you're reading right off the script. You know, you could be a doctor just by reading those words. And It's super sad, but from the globalist perspective, from the elite's perspective, it seems like it's really hard work. It's almost like a self-enslavement because you've got all the money in the world. Just take your $2 billion, buy an island, and just carry out the rest of your life in paradise, you know? You're still going, you're convincing yourself you have to do this. I don't know. It just seems like I said, self-enslavement. You should just be worried about yourself and your freedom with that kind of money.
You would think so, yeah, but if you look at how they got the money, then I think that's another peek into their psychology. Because, for example, let's say we're talking about one level of these elites, the Rockefeller dynasty and all that it controls. Okay, so in addition to just good old-fashioned capitalism, what we're also seeing here is the commission of tremendous crimes, ongoing crimes that any honest prosecutor would say to you, this is RICO, this is life in prison for the whole family, you know, the whole bunch of them, right? Mm-hmm. So then, having accumulated this vast fortune, they turn around with that kind of history, and there's a certain amount of nervousness, you might say, even in a psychopath. It's the nervousness over being exposed or being caught or being found out, being discovered for what they did. And so they say, well, what's the solution? And how much power can I accumulate to enact that solution? And what they come up with is, well, you know, and I mean, this is really psychopathic to the greatest degree, we have to put the whole planet under the gun in order to ensure that we're safe forever, right? Because we're at the top of the heap now. And looking down, it looks kind of dangerous from here. You have to kind of take that point of view to get a peek into their own psychology. Because, as I said before, they look down at humanity and they say, boy, that's a forest of wild animals running around there, and we just don't know what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. So we've got to bring order out of chaos, no matter what it takes, no matter how much manipulation it takes, no matter how many wars we have to promote, no matter how many countries we have to make go bankrupt, no matter how we have to rig the money system of the planet, we have to do whatever is necessary to eventually make this one nation called Earth undivided, over which we have ultimate power.
I really feel like the fear of human nature and what human nature basically is. Are we basically good? Are we able to get along collectively or communally, I would prefer to say? Or is it that we're dangerous and we have to hold a club over our heads? Alan Watts has a beautiful quote about this, is that if you can't trust your own nature, it's as if you have to hold a club over your heads in order so that we don't all rape our own grandmothers.
You bet. That's exactly, I mean, this is the great, you know, philosophical, ethical question. Are people basically good or are they bad? Good or evil?
Yeah.
If left to their own devices, are they going to basically, the overwhelming majority of them at any rate, do good and reasonable things or not? And to me, the answer is fairly clear. On balance, they will do good things if not manipulated into doing bad things. They can be manipulated. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to do that, the invention of enemies and threats and so forth. Now, that's not to say, I'm not putting up some sort of Pollyannish view of humankind. In fact, my reading of history, or of what could have been history, alternative history, is kind of the principle of non-interference. If certain people have made a society that has a certain amount of freedom, of movement, of activity, of action, of commerce, of independent thought, and so on and so forth, of economic success, the best thing that that society can possibly do is try to become self-sufficient. In other words, we don't have to go great in this mythical, you know, nation that we that I'm imagining here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to go abroad. We don't have to go to great distances to try to get stuff and control people and do business and politically influence what they're doing. What we need to do is to try to become as self-sufficient as possible. And this is going to imply that we develop all sorts of technologies. And naturally, if self-sufficiency is our goal as a nation, then the kinds of technologies that we develop are going to be different from what, say, we've got here in America in 2013. They're not going to be the same technology because the thrust is going to be aimed in other directions. For example, energy self-sufficiency, which could have been achieved many moons ago in America without any sort of wild, esoteric, you know, speculation coming into it. There are all sorts of ways of having done that already. Then we look across the seas and we see other societies and we say, wow, you know, man, they just seem to be devoted to killing each other or whatever it is.
Mm.
What are we going to do about that? Well, here's what we do about that. If we want a really good outcome, we say we're not going to interfere in any fashion, either politically, militarily, economically. We're not going to send, you know, the CIA in there to act as a front for corporate interests and try to convince these people to give up their, you know, natural resources and most fertile land. We're not going to do any of that stuff. We're not going to engage in any form of commerce with these faraway places of any kind, no trade whatsoever, which people, you know, traditionally say, well, that makes you some sort of a isolationist,
mm-hmm,
fascist,
mm-hmm,
horrible person. Quite the contrary, because now we do actually become the shining example on the hill, for real. We're not just faking it anymore with slogans and all kinds of bullshit, you know, which is the way we do it now. So now we open the door to knowledge. If you people in this distant land called whatever it is, we don't care, want to come from to us or gain knowledge from us and learn by example how we did what we did, which is authentic and genuine and real, we will give you that knowledge. You can have it, and you can do with it what you will. Of course, if you decide to do something threatening to us with it, we're prepared, believe me.
Yeah.
So we're not going to give you the whole farm at once. We just want to see what happens. And here's our political philosophy, and of course that's open to the world. You can do it for yourselves, or you can keep killing each other for the next 300 years. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But we're not going to interfere, because once we start to interfere, it's going to get worse. And that's the lesson of history, basically. It always gets worse when you interfere. It may not look like it gets worse in the short run, but in the long run, that's always the case. And that's why, historically, we've come to the place that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to dominate, control, influence other people. And, of course, when you try to interfere with other people's freedom, no matter what that freedom is used to express, you're always going to get criminals and liars, whether they're religious liars or economic liars or military or political or whatever, that go in there and say, we're here to help you, and that's total bullshit.
Right.
We're here to steal from you. We're here to rob you. We're here to kill you. We're here to say that we're going to bring you a better civilization, but that's a lie. And that's always the case. It makes it worse, not better. So that's the way things could have developed historically, would have been much better off, but it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, it's a real shame, because I do feel like people are inherently good, or at least disinterested in the lives of others, as long as they have enough resources. You know, I mean, lately we've done a few shows about scarcity and how that's manufactured mainly through the use of currency, really, because the currency seems to be what's scarce, not the resources. The grocery store has plenty of food. On an acre of land, you can grow more food than you can eat. We now have 3D printers, and depending on who you talk to, free energy devices, like you kind of mentioned. But the barrier of entry is dollars, their dollars, and it makes everything seem hard to come by because you can't get anything without the dollars. I mean, do you think that might be part of the programming, another artificial limit put on our potential?
Yeah. You bet.
Yeah.
No question about it. I mean, during the Great Depression, I did a little bit of research on this a long time ago, and I was told that there were something on the order of 1,500 private currencies that came into existence during the Great Depression,
wow.
Local currencies, right? So basically what happened was the people in a community got together, and they sat in a room, and they looked at each other, and they said, guess what? We're okay. The people in Washington or wherever it is, and the people in New York running the stock market and all of that, they're in this fantasy world with money. And whatever they've been doing or whatever manipulation, however it works, they say the country has gone broke. So let's ignore all that. Screw that. I can see here in this room, we've got a number of farmers, we've got tradespeople, we've got craftsmen, we've got all kinds of, you know, this, that, we've got land, all this. Okay. So what do you say we develop our own currency just as a means of basically barter, because that's what it is, and we'll issue a certain amount to everybody, and we'll use that to live, to exist. And they did. And they did okay. So you bet. There's no question about that. There's a currency that still exists in Ithaca, New York, called Ithaca Hours, which was founded by a guy that I used to know in Los Angeles, Paul Glover, and it's been going now, I think, for probably 20 years. And it's basically that sort of thing. And they try, of course, I guess there's a slight political slant there, but they're basically oriented toward local merchants and local producers, including farmers. And so the last time I looked, you know, they had a hospital or a clinic that would take the money. They had local merchants who would accept the money. It was getting out into the community.
Wow.
And one of the, talk about human potential, one of the interesting things that I noticed about it, which I pointed out to Paul, he, of course, already noticed it himself, was they put out a newspaper, sort of, you know, testimonials and success stories by people who were using the money in Ithaca. You found that people began to think about what they wanted to do in life in concert with using that money. It was sort of like magic, wow. So people began to think, well, man, I've got some new money here. Maybe what I really want to do in life instead of this thing over here is that thing over there.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I want to do, and maybe somebody would pay me to do that in the new money. And lo and behold, they discover, yes, yeah, somebody will pay you. And they can actually, partially at least, make a living that way. So, yeah, you bet it goes hand in hand. You create scarcity of money, you repress human potential. You reverse that trend, and so people begin coming out of the closet of their own psyches and saying, maybe I can think about what I truly want to do in life and actually do it.
Yeah, that's a pretty fascinating example of how it could be different. You know, I'm at my wit's end. I'm thinking about making a move to some smaller country where I still have internet access and can still do the show, but I'm not constantly bombarded with all the bullshit. I mean, but there's an example right here.
Yeah.
Man. That's pretty awesome. I mean, and you know, another area of this multi-pronged attack that I wanted to talk about that you've researched a lot is health. You know, obviously it'd be health. You know, we have chemtrails, fluoride, GMOs, all hitting us in the same way through various chemicals. And you've done a lot of digging into the health side of things. But what can you tell people about real health and getting sick? And I mean, are we victims to just chemicals and bad science rather than viruses and germs?
Oh, yeah. No question about it. Absolutely.
Man.
I'll give you an example. I mean, this is a subject, you know, we could talk for 4 hours about this and
mm-hmm.
not cover the whole thing. I'll say two things. One is, if you look at the medical pharmaceutical cartel, what you see is that they're basically doing market research. How can we invent a new disorder or a new disease with a new label for which we can then develop a drug? And we don't really care if the drug actually cures the thing because it's an invention to begin with. All we care about is drugging the population and incidentally making gigantic profits. So you get such an enormity of toxicity in pharmaceuticals that by a conservative estimate, every year in the U.S., 106,000 people are killed by pharmaceutical drugs directly. FDA approved, certified as safe pharmaceutical drugs. That's a million, over a million deaths per decade. Now that's a conservative estimate, and if people want to look that up, they can go to July 26, 2000, Journal of the American Medical Association, a review called Is U.S. Health Really the Best in the World by Dr. Barbara Starfield, who at the time was working at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. So everybody's credentials all the way up and down the line were meticulous mainstream credentials, and that was her conservative estimate based upon much, much research. So that just gives you a minor clue to the destruction being caused by the system. But when we get to the question of viruses and so on and so forth, here's the example I would give you. Mm-hmm. A recent paper published in the BMJ, British Medical Journal, by Peter Doshi, D-O-S-H-I, examined the flu in the United States. And what he discovered was the following, that every year hundreds of thousands of samples are taken from patients who are diagnosed with the flu up front and are analyzed in various laboratories. And what they discover is that only about 18% of those tests come out positive for any flu virus whatsoever.
Wow.
Right? So what's happening is you're getting all sorts of people, and it isn't just the flu, diagnosed in the United States as suffering from, quote, germ-caused diseases, when the truth and the actuality of it is completely the opposite. It's just false. It's just phony. And they're prescribed all kinds of toxic drugs for this phony diagnosis, and they're being herded into clinics to get vaccines to prevent this phony diagnosis. And even if I were to think, which I don't, that the flu vaccine works at all, in the vast number of cases, it certainly wouldn't work because these people don't even have any flu viruses in their body every year. They're not getting sick from the flu. What are they getting sick from? Well, all sorts of possible things. They're eating bad food. They're eating food with chemicals in it. There are chemtrail residues coming out of the sky. They're already taking medical drugs that are toxic, that are weakening their immune system, et cetera, et cetera. They're drinking water with fluorides. We could go on, they're eating GMO foods, et cetera, et cetera. But you see, germs make a tremendous cover story, and that's one of the things that I've tried to press home in many articles that I write. It's a fabulous cover story that is sold to the public. Tiny, invisible enemies attacking us, and we don't know where they're coming from. We can't see them. We're victims of them. Nothing can be done about it except to go to your doctor and get a drug, et cetera. It's a fantastic cover story for why untold numbers of people are getting sick. And so it works. So in that sense, the medical system is the cover story for whatever is really, and it's multiple factors, that are really making people sick.
It's, to me, it all harkens back to when you're a kid and you're going to school. If you've gone to a public school, it's amazing what you do learn about and what you don't learn about, because I remember germs. I remember constantly being told that washing your hands with chemical soaps is how you make them clean. If you keep a sandwich in a petroleum-based plastic bag, that's how you keep it clean, and so on and so on. But at the same time, there's some topics from school I curiously missed out on. I don't remember gardening. I don't remember nutrition, cooking, eating, balancing a checkbook, how to use, you know, the currency of the world you have to use. I don't remember any of those topics, and it's strange because it doesn't really seem like they are equipping children with any sense of divinity whatsoever, no spirituality in school. It's totally frowned upon, and we've gone into a very, very scientific, and it's like a myth of infallibility. It's a myth that all these instructions coming down from the top down, these are the proper and right instructions, and they're coming down from on high, and you have to accept them in order to, like, be accepted into the clan that's going on here.
Yeah.
Oh, you bet. I'll give you one illustration of that. In the very best health food store in San Diego, where I live, I mean, their organic produce is just far superior to anybody else's, for example. Mm-hmm. As soon as you walk in the door, the first thing you see is a dispenser for bacteria wipes.
Yeah, hand sanitizer.
Please take one, it says. Are they kidding me? And, you know, the people who are supposed to be the most enlightened about health are walking in there like robots and grabbing one of these and wiping their hands. Well, that's exactly the shit that I don't want on the mango that I buy that's being fingered by somebody who wiped their hands on that wipe.
Good point. Good point. Yeah.
But there it is. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's this kind of brainwashing, which is one half of science is perfect and we all know, you know, how to apply it and we're going to show you what to do and just obey orders, which is a total fairy tale. You know, that's, we get that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, it's the omission, as you say, in education, of all of those things that could make you know how to operate in the world and stay healthy. And, you know, I have to say for myself that, you know, I was one of the casualties of that system, because when I came out of school, I didn't know anything about anything. I mean, I knew certain things that I was interested in very much, but nobody had ever sat me down and said, there's a thing called food, and let's talk about what food is. That never happened. I had no clue about any of that until, you know, I was probably 30. So, yeah, that's the system. That's the way the system works.
Man, it's kind of depressing. But, you know, to wrap this up and try to end it on a somewhat positive idea, maybe, is with all these things being pushed on people, fluoride chemtrails, an aggressive police force, trauma-based media, brainwashing education, et cetera, et cetera, how can we reclaim a little bit of our freedom and sanity? I mean, how can people tap into their potential and circumvent some of this stuff? Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I do. Let's see. I'm going to try to give you the nutshell of it in a minute with yet another illustration. Each one of us has the potential to create endless numbers of realities that are different from the consensus reality that's out there, okay? And each one of us knows that we're looking at a charade out there in so many respects of, you know, con men that are just criminals, basically. Okay. So here's what I want to see. And whatever you can imagine, and you have to imagine in order to figure out what you can do to lead up to this moment that I'm talking about, because it's a real moment, this is what I want to see. A presidential debate on television, live, like they all are, with an audience, a live audience in the hall, okay? All the networks are covering it. There's no way they can't cover it. They have to cover it. And the two candidates, whoever they are, doesn't matter, are talking. And as they're talking, laughter breaks out. And all.
Yeah.
And this isn't just a few chuckles and guffaws. It begins to grow, no matter what they say. People are beginning to laugh in great numbers, falling out of your chair laughing, crying laughing, thinking you're having a heart attack laughing, that grows and grows and grows in the hall because all these people can see directly through the charade. It's like looking at somebody on the street and being able to see their skeleton through their clothes. It's undeniable, and it's a gigantic joke. If you're actually there and you're seeing the way these con men are trying to pass themselves off as being people who really want to help you. And as this laughter grows and grows, what are the networks going to do in the control rooms? Are they going to suddenly arbitrarily cut off the presidential debate? and then the outroar that comes after that, like, what happened there? What? Or what are they going to do? They don't know. You know, they're screwed to the wall. And the laughter becomes infectious throughout the entire country and the world as people watching this on television see what's really happening, because they too know that it's all bullshit and it's all a charade and the whole thing is completely false. And now what you're essentially getting, if you would think of it in electoral terms, is a vote of no confidence in the entire presidential election. It's all the people saying, it's all bullshit. Left, right, center, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. It's all crazy, and we're not going for it. In fact, it's just striking us as being incredibly funny right now. Well, the power of that, although there are people who say, who cares, that wouldn't change anything, believe me, that would do something significant, especially if it just kept on rolling. And there were people who could make you laugh in that way because they're pointing out the obvious fabrication of consensus reality. That's one place where the creative and imaginative potential of the individual comes into full play. How are you going to do that? How are you going to wake people up in that way so that they see, man, we're living in a sea of bullshit and we're accepting it? Isn't that completely insane? Should I cry or laugh? Well, why not laugh? And what happens if that gets to be a gigantic crescendo? And it's only the people who have zero access to their own imaginations who can't see that as a possibility, who are so super serious that they just can't see that that would make any difference at all. But to me, that's the completely natural response, among others, to what's going on now. A completely natural, spontaneous response of millions and even billions of people. And that produces change.
Yeah, man, that's poetic. That's beautiful stuff. I mean, the phrase, laughter is the best medicine, has never been truer than in that example.
Yeah, right. I mean, it really is. If, like a lot of other things, you can take it far enough. You've got to take it far enough. Mm-hmm. It's just like what laughter actually is. There's the laughter where you go, man, that, you know, and you laugh and then you stop. That was really funny. Yeah. You know, okay. But then there's that other laughter where you don't exactly know why it's happening or where it's coming from, but you can't friggin' stop. Because it's like what's happening then is consensus reality is exploding.
Yeah, it's breaking exploding. Down.
And if you can remember, which I certainly can, and it's happened to me as both an adult and a child, but as a child, I remember it, you know, vividly. Once that starts, that ocean starts, then everything is funny. Doesn't matter what happens after that. Somebody says something in response or tries to, and that becomes yet another, somehow, mysteriously, incredible joke where everybody then goes into hysterics again, right? That used to happen as a kid to me, you know, maybe once a year with a bunch of people. What's happening then is reality is exploding. All the consensus reality is exploding at once. It's like a chain reaction. It's the good H-bomb.
The L-bomb.
The L-bomb, baby.
Yeah,
go
man.
For it.
Hey, that's an awesome way to end the show, man. Well, do you want to give people your website once again?
Yeah, sure. It's nomorefakenews.com. You can come there, you can read all about what I've got going, and you can sign up for the free email list and all of that.
Perfect. Well, excellent talk, man. I really hope we can have you back from time to time to weigh in on current affairs. I really enjoyed you being here, and thanks again.
Thank you. Anytime.
All right, John. Take care.
Take care.
Damn, that was pretty good, man. What'd you think of that episode?
I loved that episode. I thought it was great. I thought it was so in line with where my head's at lately, and just loved talking with John about it.
Yeah, man. I mean, the laughter thing at the end was pretty great, because I don't know if you can remember examples of this, but I have always had a problem with laughing in super serious situations, whether I'm being yelled at by the principal or in danger of getting my ass kicked, like, I just start laughing. I can remember one example in particular. We were at Pizza Hut. We used to have these gatherings on a Friday night where a couple of guys would just hang out and eat pizza and bullshit. I mean, we were literally like in the seventh grade, so it was cool just to be alone for a night. And there was a group of guys that were probably seniors in high school who thought we were looking at them wrong. So when we were on our way outside, they stopped us and they got all up in our face. They started pushing us around like, we're going to kick the fuck out of you motherfuckers. And as scared as I was, man, I could not get the smile off my face, which just enraged these guys even more. I think they ended up throwing a box of pizza in your face.
In my face.
Yeah. And it's just so funny, man, because again, it is the breakdown. I'm just like, man, why so serious, you know?
It's a great response. There's actually the laughing many is a concept that's in like occult magic, in that if you're doing ritualistic magic, the way to break the spell is the laughing many. To just be laughed at totally diminishes the power of the spell.
Right.
And, you know, it's so cool in the context of, like, everybody laughing at the president, which is totally natural and should happen, for God's sakes. But the idea that it would really, really shatter the whole spell, it reminds me of deeply psychedelic states. The onset of a psychedelic state just makes you laugh at what just prior to it was consensus reality.
Yeah.
It just slips away, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, that was one version, but that's not the whole thing.
Right. And, I mean, isn't there also you told me about this, but laughter meditation is a thing where people just get together and just force themselves to laugh until it becomes contagious and natural, and that in itself releases endorphins and positivity, and then you go on about your day.
It's a fantastic meditation. It's better in groups. It's kind of hard to do by yourself.
Right.
You know, you can fake it for a long time and you're just not laughing. And then you're like, is anyone listening to me? What am I doing?
Yeah.
But with others, it's great. Another one I did, oh my God, this was under the influence of psilocybin mushrooms one time, but it would work without the mushrooms. Believe me. I believe with meditation, this stuff works without the enhancement devices such as mushrooms, but the trick is you get in a circle, five or so members, each person lays down, you put your head on someone else's stomach, and you create a ring of ears on stomachs, and all of a sudden, if anyone starts laughing, it is so ridiculously contagious, it feels so weird and ridiculous. You start laughing, the person's head is on your laughing stomach, and they start uncontrollably laughing all around the circle. It sounds insane, but it is a really funny and fun exercise to do.
Yeah, it's so weird. People just feel uncomfortable doing those kind of things. I guess because we're just so used to being serious adults and people can't
pay attention.
Yeah, people can't break that. It's tough to break away from. That's why I think these vices or these chemicals, you know, like alcohol, marijuana, it's escapism. It's escape from that very seriousness.
Oh, definitely. And John, I just really love the way he laid it out, because he does make it seem so absurd. He shows the total ridiculousness and subjectivity of psychology or psychiatry, which then is taken as top-down, totally factual. This is, you know, an expert said this. An expert said you have what bipolar, and he's the expert. That's why we're paying him. And like, you know, it seems so serious to people now, but, you know, what may seem kind of ridiculous to somebody in a scientific mindset is if your kid was acting up in school, and so they said, that's it, you got to go to a Reiki specialist, they're going to have to realign your auras, and they have color therapy. And a scientist, you know, somebody of the normal kind of point of view might just look at that as totally absurd. And in the future, I hope that people will look back on psychiatry and pharmaceuticals as equally absurd as color therapy. And just, it was in an era where it was taken to be totally legit and scientific and factual. And in the future, we'll look back on it and just laugh in the same way that we look back on the mythologies of ancient people and laugh and say, oh, they were so primitive. They were doing such stupid stuff.
It would be great. It'd be great to have people look at currency that way. You know, and I think the third Zeitgeist movie, they talk about if we ever do get to a resource-based economy, can you imagine sixth graders in school learning about the old ways of capitalism or communism, same fucking thing, of just monetary systems, and just laugh, just be like, oh, so you just let people die in the streets outside of the grocery store. Oh, that's cool. That makes sense.
Well, the grocery store had to lock the dumpsters so that people wouldn't know how much fresh food was actually going out of there.
Yeah, that was your way. Okay. Oh, so you literally took the entire country and took wires all the way across, you know, mountains, everything. You put literal wires to everyone's house and a meter on each house so you knew exactly how much to charge for the energy that they're using, which is generated by a power plant, which the power plant doesn't know how much energy should cost. That's just a barrier put on electricity. Oh, that's the way you guys lived. Oh, adults lived like that too? Okay, cool. All right, well, I'm glad that my parents didn't fuck a few years sooner.
Oh my God, we're born right at the edge of this, because I really feel like the youth are waking up. The youth, in my opinion, there's a real opportunity. They feel like they're breaking out of the trance. They're starting to look back at literally all of the behavior patterns of their parents' parents, all your uncles, aunts. All these people act the same. All these people, this comes from a culture that got us to where we are now, but now we're looking back and thinking, like, this shit is insane. Like, all these things we've been doing are totally insane. And a good analogy of this is that I hope it'll be like the youth become like indigenous people, the way indigenous people might look at a missionary who comes there and tells them what God is all about and what they have to do and what they're doing wrong. And the indigenous is like, that is a whole different mythology. That's your mythology. It's not mine.
I wish I could be more optimistic. I don't know. A lot of people, I guess, seem to be waking up. I mean, I like to look at the numbers of the show, honestly, and I don't talk about it very much, but there are tens of thousands of people that listen to every episode, and it's kind of one-sided because I don't get to hear their opinion, but I just have to assume that by tuning in, by listening every week, they're in agreement with at least 80% of the bullshit that I say, or that, you know, I have guests on to kind of push these kind of ideas, and that's hopeful. That gives me some optimism. But at the same time, I mean, you and I both know the people that we know in our regular lives, the people we grew up with, the group of friends we had who were always down for laughter. You know, man, the group we had in high school was insanely fun, and it all just broke apart because of the financial system. You have to get involved. You can't live at home anymore. You got to start living on your own, which is shackles you down to a mortgage or rent, and you got to figure out a way to pay for it. And it sucks all the fun out of life. And unfortunately, we've never thought that there might be a better system than that. It's a damn shame. But when I look at the numbers of the show, I am encouraged that I'm not alone. But I wish we could take these people and really do something. You know, I really wish a community could start. That's what's so disheartening about going to Conspiracy Con or Paranoia Con and seeing it be kind of barren, is there are people out there, but we got to put real world energy into this shit. It can't all just be listening to a podcast or two. You know, there's got to be some real world energy applied, and it can be fun at the same time if you get in the right mindset and have the right amount of people. But I don't know, man. At times, I go back and forth. I want to create a small community that has these values at heart, but then other times I'm thinking I can't do it, and I just might as well retreat to Mexico, retreat to Chile, take care of myself.
Retreat to Mexico sounds pretty sweet to me.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could organize that. Maybe a lot of people would be willing to do that.
It's already taken shape. It's coming together. I think we could start I don't know, I think you mentioned on the show one time we could have a Higher Side Chats themed resort in some other country that we set up, and it would be legit.
Yeah, I don't know if I talked about that on the show, but it was definitely an idea. Like, if we took a place in Acapulco, Mexico or something, and we lived there and had a good internet connection, and maybe, I don't ever want to charge for the show. That's like, I'm so against that. But at the same time, like, I got to get out of the 9-to-5 job and really dedicate myself to this project. And there has to be some type of funding for that. And there just really isn't right now. But it would be amazing to fund a community where, instead of doing these interviews via Skype, which we could still do, we could also bring people in, and this resort would just have a constant flow of creative thinkers, of great minds coming and lecturing. It would be pretty awesome, and people could come and stay, and eventually I think a community like that could grow and grow bigger and bigger until it just negates the authoritarian police state.
And it's not that our particular group has to overcome the entirety of the trance. It just needs to carve out a little space where we can be sovereign. We can have our own little mythology, our own idea of what a day should look like and how much time should be spent having fun as opposed to being extremely serious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to fucking make anybody do anything, but I want to have the freedom to enjoy life, and that is being choked out of me all the time.
Your power, as John said, to manifest a new, unique reality and outlook, and just to break the trance. You're already doing it, man. You're carving new terrain. I feel like even if people aren't totally in agreement with all the things said on this show, which can be at times highly speculative, I think at least we're having a narrative. At least we're having an ongoing conversation, really trying to map out. Let's chart it all out. What is fucked up about the way things are? What do we not like? What are people tired of? What can we fix? Where can we go from here? And it's moving. It's got some directionality to it.
I know, man. It's just about taking it from the digital space and into the 3D world. It's not manifesting in the 3-dimensional space like I wish it was. But, you know, 2 years in, there's time. There's definitely time. Kyle, I definitely appreciate you being here, doing these little before and afters with these interviews. I think it's great, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that with me.
Yeah, I love doing it, man. You put me on with some of these most interesting researchers who've got a really good grasp of all kinds of stuff, and it's an honor and it's a pleasure to be a part of the show. And check out my blogs as well. They're legit. It's a process to write. It's difficult. And a lot of times I ask for feedback from people and I don't get it and I feel like a piece of shit, but I'm going to keep churning them out. So guys, if you'd like to give me feedback, that would be great as well.
Kyle's pieces, Conversations with the Other, are up about once a week, maybe once every 10 days at thehighersidechats.com. I also tweet these things. I put these things on Facebook. Give them a read. And yeah, comment, respond. I do appreciate the emails and Facebook messages I get back. It's pretty overwhelming. I try to respond to as much of them as I can just to let you know I got them. And it's great. So, you know, all right, people. Once again, please share the show, review the show, retweet it to your friends. Help me not be a piece of shit failure, which is how I feel like I am right now. You know, also check out Mind Comics at mindcomics.com for some enlightening and affordable entertainment, and use the coupon code THC to save 20% and let them know that I sent you. Check out Conspiratees for some badass shirts. And if you're in the Midwest, check out the geographically accurate Mid-Continent Paranormal Conference. There it is, people. The fat lady is singing, and I declare this meeting of the Midnight Society officially fucking closed. Thanks, everybody.
Son, look at all the people in this restaurant. What do you think they weigh? And out the window to the parking lot, at their SUVs, taking all of the space. They give no fuck, they talk as loud as they want. They give no fuck, just just as long as there's enough for them. Gotta get on the microphone down at Walmart and talk about some shit that's been on my mind. Talk about the state of this great nation of ours. People look to your left, yeah, look to your right. They give no fuck, they buy as much as they want. They give no fuck, just as long as there's enough. When you like to see them in the National Geographic, squatting bare-assed in the dirt, eating rice from a bowl, with a towel on their head and maybe a bone in their nose. See that asshole with a peace sign on his license plate, giving me the finger and running me out of his lane. God made us number one 'cause he loves us the best. He should go bless someone else for a while and give us a rest.